Welcome to The Word from Porter Street, the podcast in which I, Chris Phillips, report on my teaching, research, and whatever else might occur to me to talk about. I realize it's been over 3 months since the last installment. Actually, it's almost 4 months now. And a lot of life has happened in between. There's been a lot of personal life, certainly, and a lot of professional life that's happened. My book has come out. I've been to 2 conferences, and I've started to get a sense of where I might be heading next. I already had projects in mind, but just in getting a sense of my trajectory, my workflow, I'm starting to get a handle on that. I'm particularly working on my database on the Easton Library Company's records, which I talked about last time. And this summer, that's my main work. It's also the subject of a conference paper I'm giving at the SHARP conference, the Society for the History of Authorship, Reading, and Publishing, in a couple of weeks in Dublin, Ireland. I'm really excited to get into the mix with these international scholars, people like Mark Towsey, who have been working on these kinds of library projects for some time. Also people like Frank Felsenstein and Jim Connolly at Ball State University, who have been working on records in Muncie, Indiana. So this should be a really exciting time, a chance for me to get some new thoughts, some new inspiration for what this project can amount to, what it can mean, what I can do with it. The conferences that I've been to have shown me recently that there's a lot of interest right now in the history of reading. There's interest in library studies, in using digital humanities, some sort of data sets to try to make sense of the history of reading. And so I feel like I'm getting to this project at the right time, not just in that I have an audience, but also that there are enough people who have done this already that I have a number of people that I can model myself after. And I'm very appreciative of that. One thing that I wanted to talk about today beyond that is a little bit of what I've been figuring out in terms of workflow. Starting in January of this year, I started to discover the joy of fountain pens. And this has led me to spend more time taking notes, more time journaling, reflecting on what it is that I want to do next, what it is that I'm doing right now. And I have started to get to the point where I'm experimenting with drafting things longhand instead of on the computer. This is the first time since high school that I've been drafting things longhand, and even I remember writing most of the pieces that I can remember in any way in high school on a keyboard, directly into a keyboard. So this is new territory for me as much as it is also very old territory, and so I'm interested in sharing reflections from time to time on how that process is going. But it's very much attuned me to the materiality of text, of production, reading, the ways that we get the books, the words that we have. And so I'm hoping that this will give me a greater sensitivity to this as I proceed this summer. My other big project is going to the American Antiquarian Society in just about a month to do about 4 weeks of work on children's primers, readers, textbooks that were used to teach children how to read in the 18th and early 19th centuries. And I'm going there to see what the presence of hymns is in that collection. How were hymns used to teach reading? How did the presence of hymns change the valences of reading as a moral act, as something that involved reading aloud? Was it a matter of learning to read poetry as text? Was it a matter of reading poetry alongside prose? These are some of the questions that I'm taking in to this research, and I'm looking forward to seeing what I find in that. The poem that I'd like to share today comes from a poet that I've not exactly rediscovered because I don't think he was off my radar, but that I've been very glad to come back to this summer. Robinson Jeffers, the Carmel-based poet, who wrote on the edge of the Pacific Ocean during the time when Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, Wallace Stevens, William Carlos Williams were writing on either side of the Atlantic and bringing American poetry into what they understood to be its next age. What I want to read here is a poem called Point Joe, which reflects on what it means to be permanent, what it means to be in flux, and I feel like at this point in my own professional development, this is a poem that's as apropos as any. Point Joe. Point Joe has teeth and has torn ships. It has fierce and solitary beauty. Walk there all day, you shall see nothing that will not make part of a poem. I saw the spars and planks of shipwreck on the rocks, and beyond the desolate sea meadows rose the warped, wind-bitten van of the pines, a fog bank vaulted, forest and all. The flat sea meadows at that time of year were plated golden, with the low flower called footsteps of the spring, millions of flowerets, whose light suffused upward into the fog, flooded its vault. We wandered through a weird country where the light beat up from earthward and was golden. One other moved there, an old Chinaman, gathering seaweed from the sea rocks. He brought it in his basket and spread it flat to dry on the edge of the meadow. Permanent things are what is needful in a poem, things temporally of great dimension, things continually renewed or always present. Grass that is made each year equals the mountains in her past and future. Fashionable and momentary things we need not see nor speak of. Man, gleaning food between the solemn presences of land and ocean, on shores where better men have shipwrecked, under fog and among flowers, equals the mountains in his past and future. That glow from the earth was only a trick of nature's. One must forgive nature a thousand graceful subtleties. And that concludes this installment of The Word from Porter Street. And until next time, may you find good words and delight in the words that find you.